You're listening to Tech Tank, a bi-weekly podcast from the Brookings Institution exploring the most consequential technology issues of our time. From racial bias in algorithms to the future of work, Tech Tank takes big ideas and makes them accessible.
Thanks for joining our Brookings Tech Tank podcast. I'm Daryl West, a senior fellow in the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. AI is generating a lot of attention from policymakers all around the world. The European Union has implemented its Digital Services and Digital Markets Acts that have tighter provisions for the tech sector. And in the United States, there are a number of state and federal bills that have been introduced and in some places actually passed into law. While elected officials are deciding how to proceed, there also are several court cases percolating that pose major ramifications for digital policy. To discuss these important issues, we are pleased to be joined by a distinguished expert. Steve Overley is the host of Politico Tech, a daily podcast covering technology issues. Before joining Politico, he was a staff writer at the Washington Post, where he specialized in business and technology news. Steve, welcome to our Brookings Tech Tank podcast.
Thanks for having me, Daryl. Great to talk to you.
So I want to start with the European Union, which of course has been very active on a range of technology issues. It has tough new rules for the tech sector via its Digital Services and Digital Markets Acts. Among the provisions include more stringent rules for the largest platforms, defined as those serving more than 45 million Europeans. It also says companies can't favor their own products over rivals on e-commerce sites, that they must improve the ability of consumers to be able to switch service providers, and that firms must provide greater access to certain types of platform data. How do you see these new rules affecting tech platforms?
It's a great question because I think both the Digital Markets Act and the Digital Services Act are really aimed at tackling issues that regulators for the last decade have been struggling with when it comes to big tech platforms. So if you take the Digital Markets Act, that's really aimed at e-commerce and online advertising and some of these areas of the digital world where there's concern that big tech platforms have too much power and control and that that's distorting the market. And so some of the regulations going into force as part of that legislation will change their business models. It will affect the way that Google and Apple run their app stores, for instance, or affect the way that companies like Amazon, Google, and Meta approach online advertising. And so ultimately, we're already hearing companies talk about changes that they're making to their platforms in terms of what data they disclose and who they disclose that to, you know, how they show search results on websites, the ways in which they recommend products or refer users to different websites. So really, you're seeing very fundamental changes in how these platforms operate. The Digital Services Act, which is really aimed at regulating large social media platforms and the way that they handle online speech, similarly is already having an effect on these platforms. You know, some of the content that regulators are targeting with the Digital Services Act include things like hate speech, you know, child exploitation, and that's content that most of these platforms don't want to be hosting anyway. But their ability to crack down on it has always been hit or miss. And this regulation will sort of force them to be more hit than miss. And so you're already hearing EU regulators start investigations into companies and really indicating that they plan to hold them accountable for all of the requirements in that law.
So you mentioned the changes in the business models for the tech platforms. What will these new rules mean for consumers, and how meaningful do you think the new protections are?
So both the Digital Services Act and the Digital Markets Act will have an impact on consumers and the way that they experience these major tech platforms. So for instance, with the Digital Services Act, it'll certainly change some of the speech that they see, as long, particularly European users, because these platforms now have laws to abide by and financial penalties to avoid that require them to be more proactive in removing harmful content. And so if you're using Facebook or Instagram or TikTok in Europe, you know, there's a chance and there's a high chance that those platforms will now have more stringent content moderation practices in place. And when it comes to the Digital Markets Act, the impact there for really consumers is it will affect the way that they experience online commerce and online advertising. You know, these platforms now have rules against, you know, prioritizing their own products over those of their rivals. They have rules about what data they collect from consumers and how it's shared. And so what that means is when you go to buy things online, the products that are recommended to you may look different in Europe as a result of these rules. And the search results that you see will look different as a result of these rules. You may be asked to opt in to sharing more of your data with advertisers. And so in some sense, you know, consumers will have more control over their online experience. But what's interesting, and, you know, we've seen this before, it may also be a bit annoying. You know, we saw this after the General Data Protection Regulation went into effect, where consumers had more control over their data, but they also started getting pop-ups asking for consent to use that data. And so, you know, the degree to which consumers will respond positively to these changes remains to be seen, and the extent to which their online experience looks and feels different, I think, also remains to be seen.
That is a great point about the number of pop-ups, and I've noticed that when I go to European sites, I get a lot of pop-ups, and they're asking me, what privacy choices do I want to make? And I have to think about it. You know, what do I want to be protected from?
I was just saying, you know, we've all had this experience online where you're searching for something and then all of a sudden it starts showing up in all of your ads across the internet, right? Or in the posts you see on social media. And that often can feel creepy. But sometimes if it's a product that you really like or need, it can feel helpful. And so, you know, to some degree, like the line between, you know, what's sensitive and private and what isn't, what kind of online advertising tracking is creepy and what isn't, is very much dependent on the preferences of individual users. And so these regulations, you know, take a bit of a broad brush. And ultimately, you know, the degree to which consumers like that or not, I think remains to be seen.
And I do think that's an important advance, just in giving consumers more control and letting them make that choice as opposed to the platforms making the choice on their behalf. Now, you mentioned new restrictions on ad targeting, which is a part of the legislation that has been enacted in the European Union. What are the new restrictions on ad targeting for digital platforms, and how will that affect their business models?
So there's a number of changes for online advertising, specifically for platforms that have been identified as gatekeepers, meaning they are large enough, you know, based on their user base or revenues or other factors, they're considered large enough that they must comply with the Digital Markets Act and the restrictions that it puts in place. And when it comes to online advertising, that shows up in a few different ways. You know, there are requirements around disclosures and getting opt-in from users. And there are also requirements around what data and information these gatekeepers share with those who advertise on their platforms. You know, how do they prove that they're actually reaching the audiences that they claim to be reaching, you know, that the metrics that they share with some of their customer base, these folks who are actually advertising online, are accurate. And so in many ways, I think these regulations are aimed in part at transparency and then in part at fairness, trying to level the playing field so that, you know, the dominance of these online advertisers is not so felt by smaller companies.
There always are interesting questions about the enforcement of the various provisions in these types of bills, and I note that there are going to be hefty fines of up to 6% of global revenues for various types of infractions, and we should note that the European Union just fined Apple $2 billion for anti-competitive behavior associated with its app store. So are these fines large enough to actually alter platform behavior?
You know, it's an interesting question because the EU is certainly no stranger to big fines on tech companies. You mentioned this recent one on Apple. There have been billion-dollar fines imposed on Google. You know, and so the extent to which money is actually a motivator here. I think it's an open question because, you know, at the end of the day, does any company want to pay billion-dollar fines? Of course not. Can these companies afford to pay those fines? Absolutely. You know, even a 6% of, you know, even a fine that is 6% of their global revenue is a survivable hit for these big tech platforms. And that's, you know, not to mention the fact that any fine that is imposed will certainly face legal challenges. And so, you know, these companies ultimately are very profitable. And I guess I'm to a degree skeptical that money alone will be a deterrent. That being said, you know, money plus regulatory headaches plus public shame is potentially a motivating combination of factors here. And so I think all of those factors together may be what ultimately drives compliance. I think we've seen, especially American big technology companies, become very sensitive to and aware of the criticism that they face from tech regulators. And they recognize in many ways that the attitudes toward them that existed maybe a decade ago have shifted and soured. And so there is a desire for these companies to keep the heat off themselves, to not draw even more scrutiny. And so I think that is also really a driving motivator here when it comes to complying with these new regulations.
You know, it's interesting you make the point that even billion-dollar fines are survivable hits. It tells you a little bit about exactly how many billions in profits these companies actually are making.
Right. I mean, their investors are not going to like it. That's for sure. The executives are not going to like it. But can they pay it? Yes.
So let's switch to the United States. So here we are seeing lots of proposed AI legislation, both at the state and the federal levels. And some states actually have passed new requirements on tech companies. What are the most important new bills that have been adopted, and how effective do you think they will be?
So I think the areas where we've seen AI legislation advance the most so far is certainly at the state level, and it's in very niche areas around, you know, AI use in political advertising, for instance. And so what we've seen is sort of very specific and targeted bills that have actually passed or gotten close to passing. What we've seen much more of, though, is a lot of discussion and interest in regulating this space. And that's true at both the federal and the state level. I think the reality of tech policymaking in general is that we will see the states really move much more aggressively on this and get much farther ahead on this, certainly this calendar year. But I don't think that this is an issue that is going away. Faster than any tech issue I've covered in the past, this has captured the interest and attention of regulators. And that doesn't always lead to action. But the fact that it has taken off so quickly, the fact that they're speaking about it in sort of such urgent terms, does suggest an interest in putting some rules in place here.
And it seems like a lot of the campaign communications legislation that has passed does address the transparency side, as you mentioned, but I worry that that's not going to be sufficient because, you know, it's one thing to let voters know that AI-generated content appears in campaign communications, but the real issue that I think everybody worries about is the harm aspect. Like, is there going to be an explosion of disinformation, and is that disinformation going to influence the vote? So in your view, do we need to go beyond transparency to address the harm aspect?
I think that is certainly a focus of a lot of the discussion right now. The problem, and this happened with the debates around social media and misinformation, the problem with these discussions of AI and misinformation, particularly when it comes to politics, is running into free speech considerations. You know, the fundamental principle that the federal government or any government should not dictate what you say and how you say it and where you say it still applies in an AI world. And so, you know, I think we're going to run into a lot of legal challenges if governments really try to push beyond transparency into regulating actual speech. Now, that being said, there may be approaches to regulation, and some of these are being discussed, that would not run afoul of free speech considerations. So, for instance, requiring disclosures from companies about how their platforms are tested and what safety measures they've put in place. Requiring transparency and disclosures, as we've been talking about, but also sort of limiting access to these AI systems, especially the most powerful ones, you know, making sure that they're not being used by a bunch of anonymous potential bad actors. So I think that it's still very early in the rulemaking process to say where lawmakers will come down on this. But ultimately, like, the concerns over free speech are legitimate, and I think that may wind up being a limiting factor in terms of the degree to which they can minimize those harms, which I'll just add quickly, I think raises the question then, what will companies do about this? You know, what do these AI platforms, what controls and guidelines do they put in place to prevent that kind of abuse? You know, they're not beholden to the First Amendment. They get to decide how these technologies are used. And so the pressure will also fall to them to make some of these tough decisions.
I think one state law that will be very interesting to watch just in terms of how it unfolds will be Minnesota, because Minnesota has actually been more aggressive than most states. They've included transparency requirements in the use of AI-generated content and campaign communications, but they also are going to the harm aspect. So, for example, if a candidate manipulates an opponent's image, like, for example, we're seeing Nikki Haley's head put on the body of a naked woman, if candidates do something like that without the express permission of the candidate affected within 90 days of an election, according to this new Minnesota law, that would be a violation of the law. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out and whether other states kind of copy that type of approach.
Yeah, we had the then chair of the FEC on the Politico Tech podcast talking about this very issue, because there are some federal rules against, you know, misrepresenting your opponent. And the idea is that those rules would still apply in an AI context, in an AI world. But there are some limitations on that. So, for instance, you know, one candidate cannot falsely represent another, but, you know, are there rules preventing some political action committee from doing that, or preventing just an average user from creating this manipulative content and spreading it? No, like, those rules don't exist. And so this is very much going to be a whack-a-mole problem, where no matter what regulations are put in place, none of it will, with one strike, solve this problem. It's going to be a matter of, I think, you know, issues emerging and lawmakers and regulators responding, and then other issues emerging and lawmakers and regulators responding to that. And, you know, there may be some overarching guidelines that are put in place, but, you know, I personally wonder the degree to which this is a problem that will be solved versus a problem that can only be managed. And if I were betting, I would put my money on the latter.
Now, that makes complete sense to me. And of course, I think what everybody's worried about is, any new legislation or any new regulations, will they be in time for the 2024 election? Since we're basically talking about 7 or 8 months from now, and given the slow pace of the legislative process, it just seems like the tech innovations are going to far outpace any regulations, and we're probably not going to see much relief in time for this year's election.
Right. I mean, that's certainly true at the federal level. I think at the state level as well, you know, some states are already moving on this or have acted on this. But, you know, the 2024 election is months away at this point. As you and I both know, the closer you get to an election, the less legislating and rulemaking typically gets done. And so, you know, the chances of real rules coming into force before November seem very slim. That being said, I do think this election cycle will be very educational, in the sense of, we're already seeing some initial ways in which AI is being used and, frankly, being abused. And so those offer kind of a cautionary tale of what's to come. And perhaps coming out of the election, we may see regulators use those sort of cautionary tales as an impetus for passing rules in time for the 2026 midterms or the 2028 election. And those examples, by the way, come from the United States, of course, but I actually think some of the most interesting and perhaps most troubling examples of AI are coming from overseas in elections that are happening in Asia, for instance. And so it's important, I think, to look at these issues through a global lens because there are lessons to be learned from elections happening in other countries right now as well.
That's a great point. And I'll just add that any U.S. legislation is not going to be able to reach foreign actors who may be interested in influencing the American elections. And in fact, I would anticipate that probably the worst abuses in our election will come from outside the United States and therefore be beyond the legal purview of whatever legislation gets passed, either at the state or national levels.
That's right. That was certainly true with a lot of the misinformation we saw around social media, especially in the 2016 election. But yes, I mean, foreign adversaries have access to many of these same tools. You know, they are using them, we already know, for propaganda and disinformation campaigns. And so as these technologies get more sophisticated, as, you know, some of these nefarious actors get more sophisticated in how they use them, there's no doubt that, like, that will be a problem that U.S. regulators and lawmakers will have to contend with. And U.S. companies, I'll just add as a quick aside. And we've seen some of the tech companies put, you know, AI policies in place, you know, limiting the way that their AI systems can be used to generate political content or the way that political content can be shared on social platforms, for instance. But as with all of these tech issues, the pressure will not just be on regulators, it will very much fall on the companies themselves.
So we also are facing some looming court cases in the United States. There are some cases winding their way through the system. Some of them are reaching the Supreme Court. Others may reach the Supreme Court in the very near future. There's social media content regulation issues. There's cases involving the possible coordination between government and tech officials on disinformation. What are you watching on the judicial front?
Yeah, I actually think that state capitals and courtrooms are the most interesting forums to watch right now for tech policy in the U.S. And so when it comes to the courts, certainly there's several cases pending before the Supreme Court that could have an impact on tech platforms. You know, we just recently heard arguments against laws passed by Texas and Florida when it comes to speech online and, you know, imposing regulations on how platforms like Facebook or Twitter/X regulate online speech. There's a case coming up in a couple of weeks that has to do with communication between the Biden administration and tech platforms and the ways that they've addressed misinformation. And so I think one of the most interesting issues, and they sort of center around this idea of free speech and the First Amendment, some of those issues coming before the court this year could be very consequential for how tech platforms are regulated in the U.S. You know, we were talking earlier about the Digital Services Act in Europe and how that regulates social media platforms and their online speech. There really isn't an equivalent law right now in the United States. There are some sort of laws being debated that would affect pieces of online speech. But ultimately, it's a very different landscape in the U.S. And so what decisions the court makes in those cases, I think, could be very consequential. The other court cases that I'm most curious to watch are some of the emerging cases we are seeing around the use of artificial intelligence. You know, specifically, you know, there's a lawsuit right now between the New York Times and OpenAI over, you know, copyright considerations. You also have creatives like, you know, comedians and musicians suing AI platforms for, you know, in their view, violating copyright protections. And so we are, in my view, at the dawn of a lot of legal challenges to the use of artificial intelligence and the way that these systems have been developed. With the caveat that it's too soon to tell, I ultimately think those legal battles could be as impactful, if not more impactful, than the regulatory debates that are happening right now.
I agree. I think people really should be paying attention to the courts because in the absence of congressional action, and given the fact that there actually are very few states that have passed much regulation in this area, that almost by default, these legal cases could end up making policy. So the question I'd like to ask you about that aspect, how do you feel about judges making tech policy as opposed to legislators?
You know, it's an interesting question because one of the recurring debates that has come up in a lot of my conversations around AI is to what degree are new laws necessary versus to what degree do existing laws apply to AI? So, you know, in the area of discrimination, for instance, you know, we have laws against discrimination in employment and housing and finance. And so there are some who argue those laws are fit for an AI world. They just need to be applied to these new technologies. And so there may not be need, you know, there may not be a need for new laws to specifically address AI concerns. But in many ways, I think those arguments are theoretical until proven. And the way that they'll be proven is in court, right? You know, there will be legal challenges, and it will ultimately be up to judges to decide whether existing law, you know, applies and sufficiently applies in the context of artificial intelligence. And so I actually think, you know, the courts will play a pretty important role here. And ultimately, at least at the federal level, we know how slow Congress can be to pass any sort of new tech regulations. I mean, how long have we been talking about things like privacy and online speech? And how many concerns have we heard raised by lawmakers without any actual new laws being brought to a vote and certainly passing? And so, you know, I think that courts will have an important role to play here. And if the courts ultimately decide that some of these laws do not apply to artificial intelligence, then the pressure will be on legislators to act. And, you know, frankly, they may not act if that pressure is not applied.
I mean, the thing that I worry about with judges making tech policy decisions is oftentimes it's extreme cases that generate lawsuits. And so therefore, judges are making policy based on unusual circumstances or extreme types of cases. Whereas legislators can actually take a broader view. Like, we really don't want policy based on extreme cases. We want them based on the mainstream problems that are popping up.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, the degree to which, you know, judges do rule on these extreme cases, and perhaps that leads to extreme policies or outcomes, that may also be a motivating force for legislators to actually pass laws that are more nuanced or more comprehensive. I think with tech in general, but especially with artificial intelligence, as much as folks are talking about the need for regulations and protections, and we have seen some bills introduced, and we've seen the Biden administration put in place its AI executive order, but for all of those initial steps and all of that discussion, there is still a general hesitancy to regulate technology because it is something that is always changing. It is something that has tremendous upside as well. And so, you know, I do think all of those, all the reasons that lawmakers have been hesitant in the past to regulate tech will still be true when it comes to artificial intelligence. And so I think you raise a really good point, but the reality is that getting federal lawmakers to act here is a pretty high bar to clear.
I mean, I think the more that states start to act and judges start to make decisions, there will be increased pressure on members of Congress, because at the state level, we don't want to end up in a situation where there are 50 different sets of AI rules. And if judges make decisions based on extreme cases, legislators probably are not going to be happy about that. This is a fascinating topic that deserves greater attention. So I want to thank Stephen for sharing his thoughts with us today. At Brookings, we write regularly about social media and digital technology. And you can find more information on our Brookings Tech Tank blog located at brookings.edu. And you can listen to Stephen on the Politico Tech podcast. So thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Daryl. Great to talk to you as always.
Thank you for listening to Tech Tank, a series of roundtable discussions and interviews with technology experts and policymakers. For more conversations like this, subscribe to the podcast and sign up to receive the Tech Tank newsletter for more research and analysis from the Center for Technology Innovation at Brookings.
Thank you.